James deals with both patience and wisdom in the first chapter of what he wrote in the New Testament. He talked about what the ESV uses as steadfastness in James 1 and verse 3, talking about trials and how the testimony of our faith produces steadfastness. And that really is what is the idea of patience generally in the Scriptures, is hanging tough, staying in there, standing in, even though the going may get rough. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Lacking in nothing. And, you know, we read in other places in the Scriptures about, you know, lacking in nothing. You know, the Lord has done everything so that we don't have to lack in anything. You know, He's always ready to supply. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and let it be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting. And then goes on to talk about the problem of the doubter. But James says ask for it. James says ask for wisdom. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. And that's probably kind of a rhetorical thing, right? If any of you lacks wisdom, is anybody ever going to stand up and say, well, I'm not one of those? So then all of us then, right, we all need to be asking for wisdom of God, who gives generously to all. Who's the most famous one that you can think of that did that? As my thumb goes back to 1 Kings. Yeah, you think about Solomon, right? When he was given the choices of what he might ask for, and what he said to God, given that choice, was, "Give your servant," 1 Kings 3, in verse 9, "Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people?" You know, even Solomon could see the task that he had before him, all of the history that he had, all of the what he was able to observe from the reign of his father David. So he just wanted as he says, an understanding mind to govern the people, that I may discern between good and evil. Well, that doesn't really mention our topic, does it? But what's God's answer? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this, and God said to him, "Because you have asked this and have not asked for long life and riches or life of your enemies or whatever, but have asked for understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind." So that's what Solomon asked for, and, you know, the ability to discern between good and evil. Understanding to the point of being able to govern God's great people. You know, he understood what it was going to take. He understood it was going to take gifts from God. It wasn't going to take all the money I could ask for. It wasn't going to take the power over my enemies, all the power I could ask for over my enemies, all right? He understood that he could have all that, and a lot of people might have thought, well, if I just had all the money that I wanted, then I could govern this great people. And Solomon could see that that's not what it was going to take. And since he asked for that then, God said, "I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you." And I think we can safely say, after, you know, reading about Solomon and the glory days of Solomon's reign, there's never been another kingdom. There never will be until we get to heaven. You know, never a kingdom before or after Solomon. Never a wiser man ever on the face of the earth, except for the one who walked the earth later, Jesus Christ. So he had it all. And, you know, not only, of course, was he, we know the story, was he given wisdom, but he was given all those things he didn't ask for as well. But the writer then of 1 Kings is able to say then later on in chapter 4, and we'll look at this in a moment again, but in chapter 4, verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure. So that's what we're talking about. That's what Solomon got, you know. Regardless of what words he used, you know, in whatever language he was speaking and whatever he was asking for, he wanted the ability to do what he said. And so what did God give him? He gave him wisdom. He gave him wisdom above all else, understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore. Breadth of mind, you know, I just think of, you know, this just went like that. the ability to take in and reason through many, many different problems. So that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. Yet now, of course, again, like I said, we know the story of Solomon. Yet it did not prevent him from being apostate, did it? It didn't prevent him from turning away from the Lord. So even though he had that, and even though we have evidence of that in the stories, you know, Solomon had great wisdom, and there's all the stories of the, you know, the baby and the sword and all those different attestations to his wisdom. Even though he had all that, it did not prevent him from turning away from the Lord. His love for women, we know, was his downfall, and he amassed a great, you know, what we might call harem. But he basically gathered quite a few women for his pleasure, and they turned his heart away from the Lord. So it is possible then that even though we may have great wisdom, it is possible then for us to ignore that wisdom and be distracted by our passions. So even though we may ask for it and we may get it and we may even use it in our lives, it is possible to be distracted away from using our wisdom. So that's something that we need to know. You know, we're never going to be at a state where we amass something like whatever it is, wisdom, something like wisdom, to where, you know, we don't have to worry anymore about what's going to happen. We have all the wisdom in the world, and we don't have to be concerned with our behaviors and what, you know, what we might do with the rest of our lives. We're never going to be away from that. Okay. So then I want to really look at wisdom tonight. What is wisdom? What is wisdom? And, you know, talk about asking for it and talk about getting it and then what we do with it. And so let's spend a few moments together on that. What is wisdom? Is it knowledge? I guess I would be hesitant to say that it's knowledge for a number of reasons. Number one, I know it's different words if I'm reading in the New Testament in the original language in the Greek. I know it's different words, and they're not really often cross-translated. And then I can look in places like in the New Testament, like 1 Corinthians 12, if you're turning along with me tonight. 1 Corinthians 12, things like Paul says in verse 8, talking about the gifts that the Spirit gave, for to one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, and to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit. You see how Paul treats them as different? I mean, they're different words there, obviously, but they're different concepts. They're different ideas. So I don't think we can just say that wisdom is knowledge. And in fact, then, you know, as we look at a lot of these gifts that Paul was talking about here in this context, a lot of these gifts were things that, given a number of years, people could develop into, right? There was even a gift of faith. And gift of prophecy and gift of knowledge, you know. So I think then of wisdom as one of those things, and this is going to come into our reasoning a little later on, but I think then of wisdom as one of those things that we kind of amass over time, right? Takes some time to develop. So it's not really just knowledge, even though I think knowledge is involved, and we'll see that in the scriptures, but it's not really just knowledge. It I think carries with it some aspect of time, and I'll get into that in a moment. So Solomon asked for an understanding mind, the ability to discern good and evil, and God responded that he would give him wisdom. So, you know, that I think gives us some idea then of what wisdom is. The understanding mind. You know, not just knowing stuff, but the understanding mind and the ability to discern good and evil. And so as we read, God said that he would give him wisdom, and he gave him wisdom and understanding, and it surpassed all others, even those on the earth that were notable for wisdom, like those of the East and the Egyptians. So let's turn a little bit to lexicons then. And so what the lexicon publishers are going to do is they're going to look into, definitions. They're going to look into how words have been used in various writings, and not just the inspired scriptures. They're going to look at all kinds of scriptures, writings, that are not necessarily God-inspired to come up with their definitions for these words. And in some cases, a lot of times, words meant something originally, and they kind of morphed over time. Doxa is a word like that that we translate as glory today, but really it wasn't necessarily glory in its originality. So things can change. But one of the lexicons that I like to turn to kind of get a good idea of words is one that's not necessarily a lexicon of New Testament words. It is a Greek lexicon of all kinds of dialects of Greek over the centuries. Okay, it's written by an individual named Donegan, and I take it off the shelf and it's huge, and I still, even with glasses, use a magnifying glass a lot of times. So that's the amount of information that's crammed into this thing, and it probably wouldn't surprise you to know that I got that from Ray Ferris. But anyway, I use it all the time. And Donegan says he looks at wisdom as eminent skill or dexterity. So eminent, above, higher, a greater skill or dexterity. He gave some examples from the Iliad. And so a lot of times when we're reading Greek and doing Greek exercises and trying to determine, a lot of Greek things, Homer is a really good one to look at. So he used some examples from the Iliad. Homer then used the word for skill in conducting public business or state affairs. Consummate prudence. Now, prudence, that's a word I think that we associate with wisdom a lot, right? Prudence. Prudence, somebody that seems like they always just kind of do the right thing, the wise thing, right? Prudent. And so Homer used it like that. And especially in the Odyssey, I remember him talking about prudent Penelope, Ulysses' wife, right? So I know he used that word a lot. And so prudence, experience in the affairs of life. Remember when we talked about that element of time and developing your wisdom, right? And so we'll get into that in a little bit. But skilled in any science or art, clever. And you can kind of see the link between clever and wise, and learned, dexterous. I also have a lexicon by Bill Mounts, who is a modern-day Greek scholar. And Mounts does basically all of his publications have to do with New Testament Greek. And so he says it carries the idea of knowledge or enlightenment, skill, prudence, philosophy. So you see the terms for wisdom come up in those types of situations, those types of concepts used when the Greeks, when they used Greek language and used those words, okay, Sophia and Sophos. I think we associate wisdom with experience. In other words, an element of time. And, you know, the quote here, you know, and we've heard this, I think probably every one of us has at least heard this sometime in our life, right? Maybe some often talking about one that is young but still seems wise beyond their years. In other words, they do things that seem wise even though they don't have the what? The age, the experience. And so I think we understand that wisdom then, with all that we've seen so far, you know, carries with it an idea of experience. We read, now remember we read that James said, ask for wisdom, and Solomon asked for wisdom. Now, you know, how does that happen? How did he get it? We ask for wisdom. How do we get it? You know, if wisdom is an experience thing, and I ask for wisdom, then, you know, am I going to wake up the next morning and I'm wise? Well, I don't want to limit God in the way that He works, all right? So I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that you're not just going to get wisdom directly from God. I don't want to limit His work like that. I would like to think that if He wants to give me wisdom directly, just plant it in my head, then through the Spirit He can do that, and that maybe He would. But I don't want to limit Him. But then I see some other things, though, that we've read about experience and gaining it over the years. So let's look at something that Paul wrote to Timothy over in 2 Timothy 3, and a little higher up than we normally look in this passage. In 2 Timothy 3, in verse 15, where he really starts first mentioning the scriptures, and how from childhood you have been acquainted with the sacred writings, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. So the sacred writings, scriptures, you know, God-inspired scriptures. Now, you know, when Paul was writing this, he was using a term, you know, like to write is grapho, and you know, so he was using terms that you know just meant writing or writings, right? But when he used them in this context, what was he mean? He was meaning the scriptures, right? So he's meaning the sacred scriptures. In fact, that's what he said in verse 15, the sacred writings. Okay, so we're not just talking about any scriptures. We're talking about the God-inspired ones, the sacred ones, all right? In verse 16, all scriptures breathed out by God. So that's the writings he's talking about. And so God's writings, the sacred writings then, my point is, have been designed to make one wise. But, you know, Scripture's not the kind of thing you put under your pillow at night and you wake up and then all of a sudden you're wise, right? How do we understand, you know, gaining the understanding and experience and wisdom of the Scriptures? How do we understand that? That takes time. That takes a lifetime. And we understand then generally that somebody with the gray hair who has, you know, spent a lifetime in doing that, we normally attribute to them a great deal of wisdom, not just because they've done it, but because of what? We see it. They exhibit it. All right? Because they have spent so much time in the Scriptures and exercising the knowledge that they've gained. So I think that's getting then at what we're talking about here. It's not just gaining the knowledge, but it is the exercise of it. Okay? And so the scriptures then have not just been designed to put the knowledge into our heads, but they've also been designed to help us exercise the knowledge. As Solomon said, you know, I want to be able to discern good and evil. You know, I want the ability that when I'm faced with situations, I'll know your word and I'll know how to exercise it. I'll know how to use it. And so, you know, hasn't that generally been kind of the way we've defined wisdom over the years, is not just knowledge, but the application of that knowledge? That's kind of generally what we say, right? And I think then that kind of rings true with the things that we're seeing. Well, the scriptures have been designed to do that. And to me, you know, that sounds like a long endeavor, not a short one. Okay, so Solomon got it. All right, Solomon got it. And however he got it, in his case, now I can understand where maybe his was a little more immediate. You know, he and I think we could probably say that, you know, Yoda's quote in the previous slide would have applied to Solomon, wise beyond his years. And so I think he probably needed it more immediately, and it would probably be more along the lines of what Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 12. You know, for a time, you know, wisdom, the type of wisdom that one might gain through a lifetime of exercising the knowledge of the scriptures was just given to people because they needed it then. We need it now in the early stages of the church, right? It was like tongues and prophecies and things like that, according to that passage. Okay, so you know, Solomon got it. However he got it, he used it at least for a time. And, you know, then that's what we need to do. We need to ask for it, and we need to get it, and we need to be using it. So, getting it and using it. We read a little bit before, if you want to go to Acts 7 with me, we read a little bit before about Solomon's wisdom and how it was greater than any other on the earth, even including the Egyptians and those of the east. We read in Acts 7:22, when Stephen was talking, Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. And Solomon's wisdom was greater than that of the Egyptians. Okay, so now we're and you know, the wisdom that the Egyptians had, great wisdom. Okay, so we didn't exactly cover everything that James covers on wisdom, did we? So let's go back there and read the other part of the typical part of James that we look at when we are talking about wisdom, and let's start broadening this out a little bit and get a little better idea of just what wisdom that we're talking about here. And if you know what I'm talking about, you're at the end of James 3 right now, in about verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. All right? So, you know, who's wise and understanding? It's going to be the one that demonstrates good conduct and works and meekness of wisdom. Okay, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So it has to do then with, you know, wisdom has to do with peace, doesn't it? And he goes then on in the chapter 4 about, you know, what causes the quarrels and the fights, what causes the unpeaceful situations among you. and it's your behaviors. And if your behaviors were of the wisdom of above, then you would have, as he says, good conduct and showing your works in the meekness of wisdom. So if we're seeing bitter jealousy, selfish ambition, earthly things, unspiritual things, or disorder and vile practices, then that's characteristic of a wisdom from below. And so, you know, just as Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of Egypt, well, when he came back, so was that Pharaoh that he had to deal with. But what did we see from that Pharaoh? We saw every vile practice. You know, we saw earthliness and unspirituality and disorder and jealousy and selfish ambition, didn't we? And so I think then that's how, you know, so it wasn't then like that Solomon then just became smarter than all the Egyptians or knew more or anything like that or those of the East. I think the implication was is that their wisdom was a different kind of wisdom. It was a wisdom from here. They knew all the stuff about what they, you know, the current thinking about the earth, but they didn't have any wisdom according to God. Well, that's what Solomon had, and that's how his surpassed theirs, because it was a wisdom from above. And that's what he was asking for. That's what he wanted. He wanted the ability to discern good and evil. And that's not the wisdom of the Egyptians. That's not the wisdom that's from down here. And so then we understand then the difference in wisdoms then, if you will. Colossians 1 verse 9, Paul mentions spiritual wisdom and understanding, okay? Now, I think spiritual wisdom and understanding gets you a long way to understanding a lot about this earth, you know, a lot about how things go on down here, you know, because, you know, this place genders evil, right? Well, you got to understand that in order to be able to discern between good and evil. So I think, you know, you may have the wisdom from below, and that kind of just limits you to knowing about the earth. But if you have the wisdom from above, then I think it even helps us understand more about the earth. The spiritual wisdom will help enable us, I think, understand the earthly as well in order to be able to discern good and evil. So we're talking about wisdom from above, as Paul calls it in Colossians 1, a spiritual wisdom. So, you know, what kinds of things have we seen? What kinds of things have we seen from that kind of wisdom? That kind of wisdom. Luke 11. Luke chapter 11 in verse 49. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute. Now, the world would say, well, if you know they're going to get killed and persecuted, why would you send them? Because that's the way the world sees things. But the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute. God knew they would do that, but he also knew why he was sending the prophets and the apostles. Okay? So that's the way the wisdom of God is. A little later on, Luke talks about it again in Luke 21 in verse 15. For I will give you a mouth, and he's talking about when the apostles are brought up before kings and governors and so forth. And he said, you know, settle it in your minds not to meditate how you're going to answer. Verse 15, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom which... Look at this. None of your adversaries will be able to withstand or contradict. Why? Because it would be a wisdom from above. Because those that they're going to be encountering, standing up against in the kingdoms and the governments, they're going to be using an earthly wisdom. Moses, Pharaoh. That's the same thing that these men then would encounter. So the wisdom of God says, I will send them. Well, they are going to encounter the wise of the earth, and the wise of the earth, because of their wisdom from above, is going to put them to death. But they still need to be sent. That's the wisdom of God, which the wisdom of the world would obviously not understand. And we see that happened, for one thing, in Acts 6, in verse 10, when talking about, is that Stephen there? That's the reference I have. But he talked in a way that, yeah, Stephen, they could not withstand the wisdom and the spirit with which he was speaking. So, you know, when people are speaking with the wisdom of God, the wisdom from above, and we can have that. You know, we see it. Moses had it. Solomon had it. Stephen had it. You know, the people that use the wisdom of the earth then will not be able to withstand it. How will they deal with it? Well, what did they do to Stephen? What was the prediction that would happen to the apostles and the prophets, all right? That's how they'll deal with it. Kill the messenger, so to speak. That's the only way they'll be able to do it. But they will not be able to stop then the wisdom from above. All right, so before we get out of here, and you know we've got a little bit of time left, so before we get out of here, we have to turn to 1 Corinthians 1, don't we, if we're going to talk about wisdom and wisdom of this world, and certainly Paul's understanding of all of that. And so Paul kind of introduces this then in 1 Corinthians by saying, in verse 17, he's wrapping up the idea of denominationalism. And by the way, you know, if you're wondering, you know, how to teach those that you know that are out in so-called denominations, this is a good place to go. Just ask them, you know, read this together where it talks about what people in Corinth did back in those days, how they branched off into different names. And just ask them, you know, and what were they doing? Well, obviously they did that so that they could practice different things. And just ask your friends, does this describe the Christianity world today? And, you know, and most of mine say, yeah, I think it does. It doesn't dissuade them from wanting to stop what they're doing, but I think they see that it describes. They usually will think, well, I'm not mentioned in there, but, you know, but at least it's a start. And so Paul then introducing that then is able to say in verse 17, you know, don't hang on to my name, for Christ did not send me to baptize, but here's what he did. He didn't send me to baptize, but here's what he did. He sent me to preach the gospel. Not with words of eloquent wisdom. So, what? Haven't we been talking about getting wisdom and using wisdom and speaking wisdom against the wisdom of the world? Christ didn't send me with eloquent words, with words of eloquent wisdom, lest the cross be emptied of its power. Oh, well, that's the reason. So let's get into this and see what he's talking about. For the word of Christ is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Now I think we're getting an idea of the wisdom that he's talking about. For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Now I find that verse just fascinating. The wisdom of God is that since the world will not know God through wisdom, then God is going to use folly. In the wisdom of God, he's using folly. Now, it's not folly as we understand it. It's not folly as God understands it. It's folly, foolishness. As the world understands it, the world thinks it's foolishness. The world is the one that thinks it's folly, okay? But that the way he sets up that statement just fascinates me. In the wisdom of God, since the world wouldn't use wisdom, God uses foolishness. And that is just amazing, you know, then how he and his wisdom, you know, what his wisdom can accomplish, right? For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. All right, so Christ is not only the power of God, but he is also the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. If God had any of those things, he'd still be wiser and stronger than men. For consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. That's what we're talking about, right? So when Paul says, I didn't come with words of eloquent wisdom, I just came to preach the gospel. Well, that's what he's talking about. Wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful, not many of noble birth, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. Obviously talking about the wise according to the world. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. And because of him, you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us wisdom from God. So it is Jesus then that is the wisdom from God, who seems like foolishness to the world. And that's the folly then that God is saving people through. Righteousness, sanctification, and redemption, so that it is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. And so that's why, that's what God's wisdom does. All right. It's not like the wisdom of the world. It looks like foolishness to the wisdom of the world, and yet it is the higher wisdom. Because it comes from, you know, the one that has given all wisdom and made possible all wisdom, and, you know, who knows what he is going to do with man one way or the other eventually. So, the power then and the wisdom then are Jesus Christ. The power then is not in any words. So if you're ever worried about, well, I'm not gonna come off when I'm talking to people, I'm not gonna come off as wise. I don't know how to say things to get them to listen to me that might be clever, that might catch them in their own thinking. I'm worried about, you know, being wise around them. Well, that's because what you've got to tell them will not seem like wisdom to them unless they can turn around from the wisdom of the world and see it. All right? So use the words you've been given. They're right here. Use these words. These words are fine. If you needed any other words, then God would have put them in here. So, you know, why do we have this? Because these words are fine. If they won't believe this, then you're not going to come up with anything better. Do you think you're going to come up with something better than these? So, you know, we should never be worried about what we're going to say to people that are of the world, even though they may be practicing something they think of as Christianity. They may still be of the world, wisdom of the world. But we're never going to find any better. That's why, you know, I struggled for years and years. Okay, how do I help reach those friends that think they're Christians, but they're in denominations? Well, you know, what we said in right here just pretty much condemns what they're doing. Let's start there. Help them to see. I don't need any other words. All the words of wisdom are right in here. And if they, it's shut down. We just talked about that in our business meeting tonight. So we didn't like to stay on too long anymore. I only had one other graphic. It was kind of cool, but I don't know. Maybe I can get the thing to start back up again by the time I get there. So we'll see. But we can obviously move on without it. So you know, it's not then that I have to come up with something clever. It's not that I have to come up with something powerful. It's not that I have to come up with something wise. Jesus Christ is the power. He's the wisdom. And I just use that. I use the Jesus Christ that I have right here in these pages. You know, and so, you know, let's not beat ourselves up and think too much about it. You know, this is the wisdom that we've been given to use. And so when Paul says, continuing on then, he says it again in chapter 2, and I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom. He uses the word wisdom. Well, certainly he had wisdom. Yes, he did have wisdom. He was speaking the wisdom of above. But what's he talking about? It didn't seem like wisdom to those of the world. Lofty words or wisdom. It wasn't the lofty wisdom. For I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and fear and much trembling. This is the wisdom of God. Weakness and fear and trembling. That's generally what we end up doing in the wisdom of God. You know, suffering for Jesus Christ and in His sake. And my speech and my message were not implausible words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that, here we go, your faith might not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. So we impart to the mature in wisdom, although it's not a wisdom of this age or the rulers of this age, and we could go on. So, as he says over in chapter 3 then, verse 18, if anyone thinks he's wise in this age, let him become a fool, that he may become wise. I think of something Socrates is given credit for. And Socrates, you know, thought of, you know, as one of the wise, right, and he lived, you know, long before Jesus walked the earth, you know, in the 300-400s B.C. And so one of the things he's credited with is something like, to know is to understand how much you don't know. You know, that's true knowledge or true wisdom, is to understand how much you don't know. And so I kind of think, you know, we need to understand, we got to that's another quote from Yoda, right? You got to unlearn what you've learned, right? and so we need to kind of back up and realize that what we know is wisdom of the world. We need to drop back off of that, become fools for the world and wise according to God. The Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile. So let no one boast in men. Let's make sure it's all in Jesus Christ. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, Paul talks about how the manifold wisdom of God, manifold he calls it there, is going to be known through the church. Okay, and so then, you know, that puts God and His wisdom on a different plane, right? That's what Paul is often trying to say. And, you know, we see the messages in the Old Testament, you know, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts and my ways are higher than your ways and all that. And so that's what we're seeing in looking at wisdom. God is on a completely different plane. Now, I want to suggest then that since wisdom in this life and true wisdom is kind of an experience thing, I want to take just a couple minutes then and suggest something for us to think about. And we're going to end up in Proverbs, so we might as well all be getting over there now. And so we're about ready to close this out. So if we get over to the Proverbs, we have to look at Proverbs if we're talking about wisdom, right? We can't get off of this without looking at Proverbs. In chapter 4, hear, O son, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. Why? Why is that? Why listen to a father's instruction? Because there's that experience. There's that wisdom factor, the experience factor, okay? And so, you know, that we need to understand that as children and parents. In some similar way, not exactly, but in some similar way that God's wisdom is above all of us, you know, we need to understand that in our human relationships, we have kind of those levels as well. You know, we have those that are wiser because of experience and training and time and living and things like that. So here the Father's instruction, because that's what He's there for, is to teach the wisdom and experience He's gotten. All right, for I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. If you take nothing else away from tonight, Proverbs 4 or 5, get wisdom. Just remember that when you walk out. Two little simple words, get wisdom. Get wisdom, get insight. That's what the father says to the son, all right? That's what the father that's saying here, his father said to him, and what he's saying to his son. Get wisdom, get insight, do not forget, and do not turn away from the words of my mouth, like Solomon did. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this. The beginning of wisdom is this. It may seem a little obvious, but we don't always do the obvious. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Isn't that interesting? The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. And so, as children then, with parents, we need to recognize that they have a wisdom because of experience that, we as children could never really understand, And we all know how we are when we get into our teenage years and late teens, and we start thinking we know everything and our parents really don't know much. Just remember that you really cannot think on a plane like your parents. In some similar way that we can never think like God does, not exactly, but some similar way, we as children will never be able to think the way our parents do. With all their experience, how in the world could we ever presume? It's so presumptuous and I think arrogant. Arrogant to think that I could ever think on the same plane as my parents. And so, I am in my mid-50s. And you all know my situation. I've got kids and grandkids. So I've got quite a brood, that a couple generations down. And many of you are in that situation and beyond of generations that look up to you for your wisdom. And yet my parents are still, everybody knows them, alive and kicking, so to speak. And with all that wisdom, I still am amazed by them at the level that they're able to think on. And so even at 53 and they're 80-ish, one's above and one's below, I still cannot fathom the way they think about things. Because I'm like two deep down generations from me, right? Well, they're three and much more, many, many more experiences, and all of that. And where I have my brood, with four, and just think about how many times they have it, because I have five siblings and we all have our own brood. So then I think as not just parents and children, but let's acknowledge it, older and younger. At 53, I may be one of the older ones in this group, but I'm not anywhere near the oldest and there are people in this group that are still a generation above me. And I need to understand, I can never think on the plane that they are until when? Until I get there. Until I get the experience that they have at 70, 80 years old, I can't think on their plane. I can't think the way they do. And in some way, I think thinking about the church, elders are supposed to have a certain amount of experience and wisdom. So those of us that are members and have elders, we should probably think the same way. A lot of times we may not be able to think on the plane that they're thinking on. We often at work, you've probably done it, we often at work seriously question the direction that, I shouldn't say we often. I hardly ever. At State Farm, we're usually not given the reason to question the direction of our highest leaders. But I'm talking generally, employees of companies will sometimes sit around and question the choices that their leaders are making, especially those that run entire companies. But they can't think on that plane, can they? You know, they can't begin to fathom the kinds of decisions that the CEOs of the world have to make. Right? And so that's just what I'm suggesting then, that we in wisdom, I think, need to think about that. All right? The experience of the levels above us that are there as parents and older ones and those that are our bosses and pay our salaries and things like that, we can probably never think on their level. So, over in Proverbs 16:31, I'll just read one of these. I had another one, but I'll just read one. Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life. So the gray hair is something to respect, and those without it should never really think that they can even think upon the same plane as those that have it. Now, those that have the gray hair and have great wisdom will know when and how to seek the counsel of younger and to, so that they can learn from them. But generally, we need to understand those with the hoary head have the experience, and let's not try to think in the way that they do. Or let's try to think in the way that they, and not never think that, you know, that we could even begin to understand how things are on their level. So I want to close out in Proverbs 2, and then we'll be done. We could read Proverbs 1 through 9 and listen to wisdom talk. I mean, that's really what is happening here in the beginning of Proverbs. And so if we were to, look at everything that is said about wisdom and Proverbs, we could be here all night and into next morning. But I just want to close with chapter 2. I can't read everything. And then the lesson will be yours. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. See, that's all knowledge is related to wisdom. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of His saints. Then you will understand righteousness and judgment and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech, who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. I appreciate your attention tonight. Get wisdom.